Hey everybody, what's happening? Welcome along to my shiny brand new podcast. I'm just going to give you a little bit of background. I did a show, a podcast called The Road Jogan Experience. The reason why it wasn't based on the Joe Rogan Experience, it was basically just because I had a lot of common interests and I wanted to make a podcast, and the play on words just seemed like the good thing to do at the time. So just a little bit about me. My name's Richard. I'm a big fight fan. I've got a lot of stuff to talk to you guys about. I'm constantly like watching the UFC fights, watching the boxing, you know, keeping in touch with what's going on and all the latest news and stuff like that. You might notice that there's some background noise on this, which is not great for a podcast, I admit. But with the Road Jogan Experience, my whole thing, the kind of unique part of it is that I do this show as I'm driving. So I'm doing this as I'm sort of commuting to my place of work or to one of my client sites and things like that. So it's all quite rough. It's off the cuff. And whatever I say, it just goes out. It's live. I don't do no editing and stuff like that. It just is what it is. I'm hoping to, with this show though, get a few people in discussion. I want to talk to people that are in maybe the boxing or mixed martial arts community, either coaches or people that are training, actual professional athletes. If you're interested, you can get in touch with me. Anchor FM is who I make this podcast with. You can leave messages for me through their site. If you listen on Anchor, you can actually leave me a voice message. If you want to send me an email, for the time being, the email will be still roadjoganpodcast@mail.com. If you've got any questions about upcoming fights or anything you want to talk about with regards to what I'm going to talk about in this show or future shows with cards coming up, boxing cards, UFC cards, Bellator, whatever it is, bare knuckle boxing, get in touch, let me know what it is you want to talk about. Tell me your feelings, how you feel about the current state of say the heavyweight division. That is one of the things that really this podcast today is about. I wanted to start it off straight in there with the Anthony Joshua versus Andy Ruiz Jr. The shocker, the one that shook the world. You know, it's for me personally, it was a bit of a strange one because I felt like for the past maybe four fights now that Joshua's had, he's not quite been the same guy that we used to see, and he's not that guy. I don't know if it was because he was trying to protect his record and he was being a little bit more tentative. Some of the opponents who he was coming up against, particularly like Joseph Parker, he was probably a little bit more worried about getting caught with something. Potentially, that was my line of thinking, that the reason why he wasn't such a knockout artist, such the showman that we were seeing. So coming up to this fight, I've slowly been thinking that, you know, Joshua's, I'm not going to say on the decline, but he's just been a little bit too reserved. So as a starting point here, I'm willing to say that actually this loss might be a good thing, because I think the pressure can be massive. The pressure can be huge when you've got all those belts and you're constantly coming up against these challengers, these hungry guys that are wanting to take them titles from you, and you're fighting in big arenas like Wembley. Obviously, this time he went to America and it was an American debut. That's kind of one of the bitter things I didn't like about it. I would have liked him to put on a bit of a show, show the Americans, you know, what the British heavyweights are about, what Anthony Joshua has been about, because if they're going to base it on that one fight, they're not going to know and love Joshua the way that the majority of the British public do. And that was a shame. But as I say, on the other hand, for Joshua as a person, as a boxer, the loss could be a good thing. You know, I've seen, it's like when Thug Rose Namajunas lost recently against Jessica Andrade in the UFC card. I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head, but she lost. And she actually just turned around and said, you know, it's like a big weight's been lifted off my shoulders, because there's got to be a lot of pressure. There's got to be a lot of pressure there carrying around those titles. you know, constantly have to defend it. In everybody, the whole world's eyes are on you, you know, and they're expecting constantly, constantly expecting. And, you know, at some point, the thing is, it's heavyweight boxing. It only takes out one person to find that sweet spot with all that weight behind that shot. And you're going to go out. It's as simple as that. I don't care who you are. I love Tyson Fury. I like his movement. I think he's so unorthodox. He's such a hard fight for anybody, especially at heavyweight, being able to move the way he moves. It's brilliant. But at the same time, you still can get hit with that one shot that's going to pull you out. Deontay Wilder proved that. And he caught him with that punch. Somehow he got up and he just made the count. But you tell me that, you know, he couldn't have been a little bit more unlucky there and been down for an extra second and that would have been it. I know the Gypsy King Tyson Fury likes to make out like, you know, he's untouchable. But at the end of the day, he got caught there. He got caught twice. The second one was more substantial than the first. So this is heavyweight boxing, and this is going to happen. And this is going to happen to Deontay as well. Deontay got caught by Luis Ortiz. Got caught with a good shot. He recovered from it. But again, you know, if Ortiz would have followed that up and maybe, you know, stuck a couple more on him, that would have been the fight over. These guys are not untouchable. Nobody's untouchable, especially at that weight. So back to the fight, back to Joshua. As I said, like some of the fights leading up, Carlos Takam, I wasn't impressed with that fight. I wasn't impressed with the way he sort of came into the Joseph Parker fight. He was a little bit better against Povetkin, but I just felt like the Joshua that was seen against Klitschko. I know if the Klitschko was a sort of a, it was such a big fight, and it was such a, I mean, it put Joshua on the map. It was an amazing fight. You can always look back at that fight and say that was brilliant, and Joshua really came back from adversity there. He got put down by arguably one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, somebody who before Tyson Fury, I think, had not lost in a decade. You know, had those titles sewn up, and there was no challenges at that point. So I know it is kind of hard to argue the fact that he was one of the best heavyweights. If you'd have put him around the times with Tyson and Ali and, you know, certain fighters that you'd think, yeah, they'll probably beat Vladimir Klitschko. But you can only beat who's in front of you. And he defended those titles for 10 years. He beat our David Haye, who we thought, you know, was going to go over to his country and do the job. So, yeah, it was a big fight, and it was such a vital thing for Anthony Joshua, and it really did kind of cement him as a top heavyweight in the game. Obviously, the belts that came with that, brilliant. And it just kind of set the bar a little bit for me. I thought, you know, if you can do that, if you can come back from that adversity, because actually, and I wish this was in a podcast that I made, but I wasn't doing them back then. But my cousin's actually a big boxing fan, and we will always sort of look at fights before they happen and try and break them down and say what we think is going to happen. And I said that Klitschko would beat Joshua in that fight. And everything that I said or thought and predicted was going to happen, happened up until the point where Joshua actually got up. Because I thought, it's going to be such a big occasion. All those people at Wembley. I felt like he was going to come unstuck against such a guy with such experience. Somebody like Klitschko has got all those years of amateur experience and professional experience. He's fought everybody who he's had to fight to remain champion. The pressure's not going to get to him. He's used to those occasions. And I thought, you know, you can't fight somebody with that kind of experience and not get hit. And judging after seeing Joshua get wobbled by Dillian White, I thought, you know, you see that there is chinks there. He's not got a granite chin. And I could see that Klitschko was going to put him down. And I thought, when he goes down, the pressure then, the whole atmosphere, that stadium, just everything that you can think of. The fact that he's fighting for the title, the fact that he's undefeated, the fact that he's in Britain, the fans are there rooting for him, the press, everything. Everything is sort of stacked against him. And on top of that, you're fighting the best heavyweight of his era, or the last era before even Joshua came along. That is a lot of pressure. And I felt that when he went down, that would all hit him harder than probably the punch that put him down. What I didn't expect was that he was going to get back up from that. And he looked tired, but he somehow managed to get his breath back. And I knew that was another thing. The one thing I always said about Joshua is the amount of muscle mass that he has can't be great for the stamina. You know, there's a lot of oxygen there taking up that mass. And it reminds me of something that I've seen on the Joe Rogan podcast quite a while back now. It was with Farasa Harvey, who trains George St. Pierre, and they were talking about, why do you think Conor McGregor gasses? And he put it down to genetics and the fact that he has such power. He has that death touch in his left hand. That's due to fast twitch muscle fibers. So it's kind of, it's one of those things that you've got the power without having that stamina to keep going. If you don't have the power, you've got your muscles don't twitch as fast, their fibers don't twitch as quick. You'll have the sort of endurance like you kind of, your Nate Diaz, how he can keep going. He hasn't got that kind of one punch knockout power that somebody like Conor McGregor has. So then you've got to think about somebody like Joshua. He has got knockout power. He has got that one punch that will put you to sleep. So the fact that he probably has that kind of same genetic of the fast twitch muscle fibers, along with the fact that he's such a big muscular species. He's a big man. He's carrying around a lot of muscle mass, which ultimately needs a lot of oxygen. That's going to take away from your gas tank. So there was all these things that were going through my head, and I kind of broke it down as scientifically as I could, and I thought, he's going to lose this fight. When he got up and gave himself a round, maybe Klitschko could have been a bit more clinical, maybe he'd give Joshua a little bit too much respect. There was a lot of nicety going into that fight, a lot of respect for each other. If he would have had that killer edge, maybe he could have finished Joshua. But that's by the by. That doesn't matter. He didn't. And Joshua came back and he finished him. And in good style. That, for me, cemented Joshua as a real... Because people still had questions about Joshua. They were still like, you know, who are these people he's fighting? Are they worthy of, you know, of saying that Joshua is one of the greats? I mean, don't get me wrong, the guy won a gold medal. He's a gold medal Olympian. So we should look at that as, you know, and be proud of that as British people. And we should look at that and just know from that that he is a good boxer. But not all Olympians make it to that elite level when it comes into the professional side of the sport. So people still had questions. Especially the fact that he got tested against Dillian White, who was still, you know, up and coming. He'd not had many fights at the point he took the Joshua fight. And it kind of showed you that, actually, when somebody's going to take the fight to Joshua, is he that good? Or, you know, is it sort of the fact that a lot of people are scared of his presence, his size, and giving him too much respect, and that was the reason why he was going around knocking people out up until that point? And this is the reason why I came out with the fact that I thought Klitschko was going to win. The occasion is the word that I was looking for earlier. The whole occasion was such a big thing. I just thought that pressure would get to him. But fair play, I took my hat off that night and I said, you know what? He deserves them titles. He's put me, he showed me, he proved me wrong, and probably many others as well. I don't think I was the only one doubting that he would beat Klitschko. He had a lot of people on his side, but I think casual boxing fans who are just looking at it from the outside perspective, like, oh yeah, it's Joshua, he'll knock everybody out, that kind of thing, and not thinking about the technical aspect, not thinking about the fact that actually what Joshua's done in such a short space of time is pretty amazing. He's not had, you see some boxers and they've had 300 amateur fights before they even become a professional. Joshua in the space of, I don't know, 5 or 6 years maybe, kind of almost unified the whole division, apart from the fact that he didn't have the WBO title. WBC, should I say. But yeah, he did a lot in such a short space of time with probably not the kind of experience that a lot of other guys have got, so you've got to give him credit for that. But yeah, I did kind of have, I don't want to say I was like getting negative about the way he was boxing, but I did worry about his approach to the fights following that. So whether that was some kind of, I don't know, scarring that Klitschko left there because he realised actually he can get dropped and it's not nice. And he had to really dig deep and fight hard to win that fight and come back from that. So I suppose there's the mental aspect of that. Did that kind of knock him a little bit? Because let's say he went in there and blasted Klitschko out of the water. I think he would have gone into his next fight, which I believe was Takam. I think he would have done the same with him. It took quite a lot longer to get into that fight. Joseph Parker, he was very, very tentative, I felt. And probably Joseph Parker could have potentially won that fight if he would have gone for a little bit more. Bit too much respect on his part there. So there's the chances are there was a mental knock there. Combine that with the pressure and everything else, you can see that, you know, where the potential is for him to then go into a fight like this in a new country, foreign territory, and lose. Because, I mean, there's a lot of things being said. So these are the things I want to look at. I do believe some of it could be true. I don't think he looked right. The first time I watched it, I didn't look into it too much because I was more interested in the fight and when he got in the ring, what he was going to do and all that. So it's easier when you see all these clips of the videos that people point out afterwards to go, shit, I didn't see that. No, he didn't look right there. I mean, there's one in particular I've seen and he did look very glazed. He didn't look focused. He just looked out of it. He didn't look in the zone. He looked more like he was not vacant. He looked more like he was vacant. You know, his mind wasn't there. His body was. It was strange. I've seen there was, I don't know, a trainer or a physio or something giving him a bit of a massage on the back of his neck. And he was just gazing. And he just from that video, he looked very strange. He didn't have his gum sealed in. He had his gum sealed out of his mouth, like maybe he was struggling to breathe with it in. The ring announcer called his name and then he just put his hand up. It could be taken with a pinch of salt. It could literally be that, you know, he wasn't trying to overthink it or anything like that. He was trying to be cool and whatever. But I don't know, it just didn't look right at the time. And then you go into the fight and you see the way he was boxing again, very tentatively. But again, like I've said in the past, you know, he's been doing that last three fights. So again, it was like, is he just waiting for that time to pick his shot? Which by the third round, he obviously managed to find. He did find a shot there. Potentially just the fact that he didn't have composure, why he didn't win that fight. Because he thought at that point when he put Ruiz down, that was it. It was game over. So he thought he could go in there and go for the big finish. Rather than maybe being a little bit more composed, pick out a couple more jabs first, keeping it arm's length, and then find the killer shot. I think he just went in like a bull in a china shop, got caught with something, which seemed to be the turning point. A lot of people are pointing to that being the turning point of the fight. The fact that Ruiz Jr. caught him right on the temple, and they're saying that it was like he never recovered from that. But I don't know. I don't know whether that is the truth or who. Nobody knows really. What I do know is that things he was saying in the corner, they didn't seem right either. So I've literally watched every round where he's gone back to his corner, and the cornerman's talking to him. His coach is telling him what to do. Don't particularly agree with the coach. His advice seemed pretty shocking, really. I think he should have stayed behind the jab more and then waited for his shots. He should have been able to keep Andy Ruiz a little bit more at bay. He let him in too easily, in my personal opinion. But when he was in the corner, when he was going back to the corners, he was asking, what's he going to do? What's he going to come in with? What do you think I should do? And the one big one was at the end of round six. And he said, why am I feeling like this, though? That was the one that kind of said to me, something definitely not right. There was something definitely not right there. For him to say something like that, you know, he's experienced fatigue. He's been knocked down. He's got back up. For him to say that, what was it? Feeling like what? Was he sick? You know, was he ill going into that fight? There's a lot of rumours about the fact that he was knocked out or concussed before the fight through sparring. So, who knows? I'd like people to post some questions or theories on this. I just find it all a little bit strange. And as I said, I know it was new territory, a lot of pressure, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, to be fair to you know, AJ himself, he's been very humble about the whole situation. He has just said it is what it is. He's took his hat off to Andrew Ruiz and just said he deserves it. It's his night. And that's that. He's the champion. But you know, that kind of shows me the person that Joshua is. Maybe he's so humble that he doesn't even want to bring any of that into it. He doesn't want to make excuses for himself for ill preparation, maybe, or being potentially not very well going into the fight, or coming in concussed through being knocked out in sparring or whatever. What was strange is he seemed a lot more relaxed and a lot more happy post-fight than he did pre-fight and during. And that was the one thing that made me think it was a relief to be beat. It was a relief. It was just like the weight of the world was off his shoulders. He seemed quite happy that Ruiz had won. And you know, for saying somebody who's a competitor, somebody who obviously don't like losing, under the circumstances, fighting in somewhere like America where you're going to want to put on a show, he didn't look too disappointed. You know, I'd have thought he'd have been pretty devastated by that. I've seen a lot of fighters where they've lost fights and been hugely devastated. And, you know, if you look at the end of that fight, Joshua had a smile on his face and his arm around Ruiz. Obviously a lot of respect, which is good. But at the same time, I've never seen him at one point go back to his corner, slump into his chair, or, you know, have his sort of hands on his face. I don't know, it just did not seem right. All we can hope for is that, you know, things will be put right in the rematch. I'm not saying that in the way that I think Joshua needs to go in there and win. Of course he does. But from a biased standpoint, I'm not saying that I want Joshua to win, but I want it to be put right. I want to see a proper fight. I want to see two fighters at the top of the game giving it everything. Because if we're not seeing that, we're not seeing who's the true victor in a fight like that. You know, I want a level playing field. I don't want somebody who's concussed fighting somebody who's fully fit. And actually, Andy Ruiz is probably feeling fresher than ever because obviously he stepped in there for Gerald Miller at short notice, but he'd already had a fight within the last few months before he stepped in with Joshua. So he was fresh, you know, and there was no ring rust there. He's obviously gotten rid of that. Joshua had been out of the ring quite a while. since his last fight. That stuff kind of happens as you get to that stage in your career, I suppose. You don't need to fight 3-4 times a year to make money. That one big fight once, maybe maximum twice a year. But yeah, I would like to know what you guys thought about that. Any other theories, any other sort of rumors going around that you've heard of? As I said, you can get in touch with me. That is roejoganpodcast@mail.com. roejogan at just the word mail, mail.com. If you send me your thoughts on that, that would be great. I'll pick that up on the next show and I'll go through them. But yeah, just something didn't seem right. Definitely, in my opinion, something was missing. The rematch is going to show us everything. You know, it's kind of, in my opinion, a make or break for Joshua. Because let's face it, not to take anything away from Andrew Ruiz Jr., but I don't think he's the caliber of opponent that should be beating Joshua. I always imagine somebody like Wilder really giving Joshua a hard time and, you know, probably beating him. But Ruiz, no, I wasn't. And that, like I say, that's not to take away from him. I just don't think he's the right caliber of opponent to beat Joshua. I felt like based on, he's a nightmare for somebody like Joshua coming forward and not being afraid of his size. But we've seen people like that, like Dillian White, that have fought him like that. You know, there is a lot of come forward fighters. You look at the Takam fight. He was very awkward. Hands up high. The guy was short. He come forward and he could block a lot of shots with the way he held his hands up. Good head movement. But he still found a way. He's always figured out the way to beat him. And I think with Joshua being, you know, you look at the difference in height and reach, he should have been able to keep Andy Ruiz a lot further at bay. Yeah, give him his dues. Again, he had good hand speed and he managed to get in on the inside. But I think Joshua was a little bit slow on his feet, just didn't keep that distance, didn't judge it correctly. For what reason? Because he should be able to do that, especially going through the rounds. You know, maybe first couple of rounds, he catch you with something you didn't expect. He's managed to get a bit closer to you. You work that out. You know, into your third, your fourth, your fifth round. I'm imagining somebody like Joshua would get stronger there. But no, I'm not going to take too much away from Ruiz. He did a great job, and he is the champion now. Fair play to the guy. Hit me with your questions. Hit me with your theories, the rumors you've heard. And I'll go through them on the next one. Interesting stuff. We've just seen Tyson Fury versus Thomas Schwartz. Easy enough win for Fury. Second round stoppage. Fury's not a power puncher as such. You know, obviously he's got power, but he's not renowned for his stoppages. He's more renowned for the fact that he's such a good technical boxer. He can dance around you for 12 rounds and just outpoint you. That's what we expect from Fury now. We expect him to outpoint people. Having said that, in America, they don't know Fury that well. And I heard something that George Groves was saying, which rang very true leading up to the fight. And he was basically saying that Fury's now got to put on a show and he's got to give the fans something they want to see. So he's got to give them like a knockout. Because it's all right fighting for 12 rounds and being like the showboat and the excellent technical boxer that he is, the way that he fought against somebody like Wilder or Klitschko, but against lesser opponents, we don't want to see that. We want to see, want something more exciting, or especially if you're an American fan, because your eyes are now drawn to Deontay Wilder. You're seeing him in the heavyweight division. He's your man from America, and he's knocking people dead every fight. You know, what he did to Dominic Brazil in one round is unbelievable. That one shot just came straight out of hell. Unbelievable power. It's actually hard to comprehend the power that Wilder has. It's ridiculous. and he may be very unorthodox and not very technical in a boxing sense, but it doesn't matter because he has the ability to knock you out with one shot. He cannot hit you for 11 rounds and throw one punch in the 12th and you'll go down. And he hits as hard in the first round as he does in the 12th. That's what's unbelievable. Now, I'm kind of contradicting what I was saying about Joshua and the whole thing about the fast twitch muscle fibers, because Deontay Wilder can maintain that and he can maintain a ferocious pace and he can go. He's just such an athlete. And maybe that's down to his build, because a lot of people look at Deontay and go, he doesn't really look like a heavyweight. Yeah, he's very tall. I think he's 6'7", but he's quite slender. You know, heavyweights tend to be nowadays quite muscular and bulky, or quite chunky, a little bit going on to the side of, let me say, fat, carrying a bit of that extra fat. Somebody like, look like Ruiz, even Tyson Fury, even though he's trimming down a bit. Deontay Wilder's got more of the physique of a basketball player. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that is the reason why he's so successful, because he is an athlete, but he was gifted with this power in his hands. So, yeah, going back to what I was saying, I heard George Groves making a good point, very, very valid point, that this is what the Americans are going to want to see. You're going to have to put on a show. And he did. And I'm glad he did that. He got caught early in the first round with a couple of shots from Schwartz. So it proved that, you know, he wasn't just fighting any bum. He didn't just dance around him for that first round and make him look stupid, catch him at will. He had a bit of good, decent head movement there. Tyson Fury is very quick and he's getting sharper as he's fighting more at the minute and is obviously so back in love with his training. You can see he's loving what he's doing. It just showed that this guy that he was fighting, yeah, he was undefeated. And a lot of us are thinking, well, yeah, he's undefeated, but who's he fought? And he fought bombs and he's probably a nobody. He did have something about him, and I reckon he could carry on. He's still a young guy. He can come back further down the line and probably challenge for some sort of title. But yeah, Fury's gone in there and he's got caught with a couple of shots, and it's like what he always says, you can't go swimming and not get wet. I love that. I remember hearing him say that the first time. And it was brilliant. I thought, you know what? That rings so true. I've done boxing myself. It's not nice when you get punched. If you want to do that as a sport, or if you want to do that, even if you're taking up as a bit of a hobby and you're going to go spar, you know, you've got to be prepared. You're going to get hit. And it's going to hurt. Most of the time, the actual training and the lead up to the sparring is what hurts you more. But yeah, I mean, you're going to get whacked now and again. You're going to get rocked. You're going to get buzzed. Hopefully not knocked out if you're in doing it in a safe environment, but it just rings so true. You can't go swimming and not get wet. And he got wet, but it didn't put him out. It wasn't detrimental. He came back second round and he did what he had to do, and he put on the show. And he certainly put on the show with his entrance and the whole kind of Apollo Creed style thing. I thought was brilliant. He's a true showman, and a lot of people are now loving Tyson Fury, which is a massive turnaround, because I remember even when he won the titles from Klitschko, people weren't on his side. You know, we should have been celebrating a British hero. He's gone and he's took the titles off of this guy who's basically dominated the division for a decade. And he came back home and people weren't loving him. People weren't really giving him that respect. And I think a lot of that's because of his actions and the sort of the way he would conduct himself and some of the stuff he'd said, quite controversial. But he's literally turned it around. And, you know, the fact that he came out and talked about depression, he's a traveling man, he's a gypsy. So men don't like talking about weaknesses anyway. They don't like to show weakness. And that's men in general. Now we're talking about a man who is a gypsy, a traveller, even more so because they are men's men. they are like the alpha males. And for him to come out and do that and say what he, you know, he'd been through, you know, explain that, you know, the reasons why he kind of went off the rails, and then coming back in the way he has, you know, is unbelievable. And going into that fight with Deontay Wilder after just two warm-up fights, which weren't anything of substance, there was a couple of guys that nobody had really heard of, a lot kind of shorter than Fury, just really tune-up fights. That's all they were. They were never expected to be issues. But being out of the ring for 2 years, carrying all that extra weight, I think he lost somewhere in the region of 10 to 12 stone. Unbelievable. And then going into fight Deontay Wilder, where arguably a lot of people would say he won that fight, and definitely showed that he was the better boxer technically in that fight, is quite an achievement. And also donating his whole purse to charity, being kind of a spokesman for people who are going through these dark times and suffering with depression. All those things have really turned it around for him and really sort of made people fall in love with Fury. I remember I've been through a bit of a love-hate thing with Fury. I remember hate's a bit of a harsh word, so I've never really hated him, but just to put it into kind of context, when he first started, I remember watching him on a terrestrial TV, Channel 5, this young fighter, just the name Tyson Fury, knowing that he's had a travelling background, everything. He was quite a humble guy, quite funny, a little bit quirky, you know, didn't look like the boxers that we'd seen in the past, heavyweight boxers such as your Lennox Lewis, Frank Bruno, those kinds of British heavyweights that we sort of grew up loving. Kind of like very long legs, obviously carrying that fat around the middle, strange style, really quirky. But I liked him. I thought, you know what, this guy's all right. He's funny and everything. And then as he went through and started getting a bit better and started sort of gaining more confidence, he started saying some stuff that I felt like was a little bit cringy. I didn't like it. Didn't really sit right with me. I think he probably went a little bit too far with some of the stuff he said. So I kind of, let's say, went off him a little bit. Plus, at the same time, I was a big David Haye fan. And those two were supposed to fight. So I suppose it's kind of like your favourite football team against another team that you still admire and think are decent, but you're always going to stick with the team you support. So that didn't make me kind of love him much more. The fact that, hey, I thought I really wanted him to beat Klitschko. He went and had the fight with Klitschko and he was trying to come back to get back to that stage. Had so many problems with injuries and stuff like that. It didn't seem like it was ever going to happen. And in the meantime, Fury actually went over to Germany and beat Klitschko. And it was like he stole the title from him almost, in my opinion. It just, a lot of these things kind of made for me not, you know, starting to dislike Fury a little bit more, or at least not liking him so much. And then, you know, obviously he just kind of disappeared and he went into the darkness, and we all know why. And since he came back and he's done all that, and I've heard interviews that he's been in, and I really admire the guy and I really like what he's doing and what he stands for now. Completely turn himself around. He's not that guy that was saying that cringy stuff. And he's openly said, you know, some of the stuff he's done in the past, he's done because he feels that you have to do certain things to be able to get places. And I suppose it's the same with Conor McGregor's, and, you know, he is the absolute king of trash talking. And look where it's got him. So, you know, back to Fury. I think going into America has been great for him. The signing, the deal that he's done with ESPN is really good. I know a lot of people wanted to see the Deontay match, but I think he's going to spice it up even more. I think he's looking at having one more fight. and then potentially having the rematch with Deontay next year. So he's going to have to get through that fight. Hopefully he does. Deontay's got to get through Luis Ortiz by the looks of it, even though it's not yet a done deal. But it looks like that's the way it's heading. So those two fights, hopefully they both do it, because it'd be nice for them to go into it undefeated. There's just something about being undefeated that, for me, adds that little bit of spice, makes that fight that little bit better. Who's going to lose that O? So I'm hoping that they both go into it. It'll still be a good fight regardless, but I'm just hoping that they both go into that fight undefeated. They've got a draw against each other. They're only people or each other that have basically stopped them from having that perfect record. There's that history there. I'm just really, really looking forward to that. And like I say, I just hope that it is the case that we see two undefeated fighters fighting it out next year. And I feel like Tyson Fury should be better for this fight. I'm not saying that he's going to win it, because, of course, you can't bet against somebody like Wilder with that kind of power. So, I want to wrap this up, guys. It's been fun. I've not really touched on UFC or the bare-knuckle boxing that's coming up. That's a very interesting one. I can't wait to talk to you all about that. We've got Malignaggi, who's fighting Artem Lobov. There's been a lot of sort of stuff kicking off in the build-up to this, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I'm kind of team Lobov. I think that Malignaggi's gone a little bit too far with some of the stuff he's done recently, with the spitting. And he's even turned around in an interview and said he would spit on Artem's mum if she was at a press conference. I think it's a little bit too far. He should know better than that. Paulie's been around a long time, and I feel like he should conduct himself a little bit better, especially when the guy is a commentator. He commentates on boxing, and people are looking up to him. You know, young kids will be looking up to him. And I don't really expect that. I don't condone it, but it's bare-knuckle boxing, and maybe that is the way they want to go. They want to sort of stand out as being the meaner, badder sort of sport out of all of them. I mean, judging by the state of people after the fights, yeah, it is. I don't know if you need to even talk that much shit to make it sort of bigger and badder than anything else. It is quite a brutal sport. I suppose at the same time, he's selling that fight. He is promoting the company with all that shit that he's doing, them antics, and the same with Lobov. But I hope Lobov can give him a fight. Personally, I think Paulie should be, at least, way too superior when it comes to the technical aspect, because the years and experience in boxing that Malignaggi has, Artem Lobov does not have probably 1% of the experience and technical ability that Paulie does. But what Artem does have, he has a lot of grit, and he's willing to just go forward and go through punches to sort of give a punch. So, you know, it's interesting. And the other thing that I've mentioned on the introduction to this podcast is the fact that towards the end of Paulie's career, he was suffering with his hands. He was suffering with the fact that his hands were weakening. It was sore. His hands were sore. And, yeah, he was wearing gloves then. You're not wearing gloves now. So how would that affect him? Are his punches going to be as effective? Do his punches need to be effective? So that's what's going to make it interesting, because if he's planning on going there and just outboxing him, you know, sitting behind a jab and not going for those knockout punches because of his hands, I feel like that will give Lobov some confidence to come forward a bit more as the rounds progress. But who knows? It's one of those unknown sort of entities where you've got a kind of a crossover, somebody coming from mixed martial arts into the boxing world. There's not really much difference for Paulie, apart from the fact that he's not wearing gloves this time. Who knows? It's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to that one, and I'll pick up on that one on my next podcast. For you guys tuning in, thank you. This is brand new. It is as I say, it's going to be raw, a little bit rough. There's a good chance I'm going to fluff my lines, get stuff mucking fuddled as I go along, as you do when you do things off the cuff. But I'm not here to edit this. This is raw. This is me. This is what you get. All I want to do is talk about the fights and talk about build up to fights, talking about who deserves title shots, the fights that have just happened, upcoming cards. Give me your questions. Send me your thoughts and let me know how you think we could improve this podcast. If you think that, you know, there's something more you want to see. I want to know from people out there. I know some boxing trainers. I know PTs. There's people I'm going to get on to sort of interview and talk fights, talk boxing, their past histories, their sort of experiences within fighting, whether it's martial arts or boxing or whatever. Some really interesting people that I already know that I want to get on. So yeah, you guys, send me those questions in. Give me your feedback. Hit subscribe. And then every time that I put a new podcast out, it will automatically come up for you, telling you that there's a new one there. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you all have a great day. Peace and love.